Obituary.
Fethullah Gülen, the scholar preacher who tried to transform Turkey from within, died on October 20th, aged 83.
At the centre of a luxury retreat centre in the wooded Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania, a stocky elderly man sometimes walked slowly about. He had been there since 1999, but was not often seen. In his native Turkey, he was under investigation and, from 2014, a wanted man. When, reluctantly, he let BBC journalists come to interview him that year, he showed them his living quarters, not the grand Ottoman-style palace at the centre of the private estate, but two rooms in an adjacent building. His bedroom barely had space for a mattress on the floor, his prayer mat, a chest of drawers, and a glass-fronted cabinet. How modestly and simply he lived. The second room, however, was lined with crammed bookshelves, and on a desk was a computer. Through this, Fethullah Gülen still regularly preached in his archaic and Koran-coloured cadences to his millions of followers in Turkey and beyond. It was through this he was to become the second most powerful man in Turkey, with only President Recep Tayyip Erdogan surpassing him. His rise had begun with schools. As a travelling preacher in eastern Anatolia in the 1970s, he had set up lighthouses for poor but devout boys who could not otherwise get an education. Boys much as he had been in this hard region, learning the Koran at a tender age, hanging on the wise talk of village elders rather than playing with his friends, surrounded by the smoke of the incense lamp his imam father lit in the evenings. He added to his curriculum, though, ideas he had picked up later, including modern science and Western philosophy, all blended with a mild, mystical, Sufi strain of Islam. The schools multiplied and acquired dormitories. At their peak, there were 2,000 in Turkey and abroad. Their amazing spread, he liked to say, was nothing to do with his own intellect or energy. It was God's gift to him and to Turkey. His schools were so good that parents fought to get their children on the list. Their graduates breezed through exams for the civil service, the army, and government jobs. Each golden generation of graduates helped the next up and on. By 2016, his followers, Gulenists, as people called them, held an estimated 30% of the top judiciary posts and 50% of jobs in the police. Their presence was so ubiquitous that they formed a state within the state. Dark, opaque, and secret were the words often applied to them. In his view, they were bringing only light. His organization, for his network of schools, thanks be to God, had rapidly grown into one, was called Hizmet, service. His followers were working for pluralism, peace, and clean government. They emphasized friendly relations with other faiths. They believed, as he insisted he did, in democracy, free markets, and free speech. And they had purpose. They should move within the arteries of the secular system, he told them, without anyone noticing until they reached all the centers of power. He liked to compare this subtle, incremental work to restoring a ruined house. Islam in Turkey was now corrupted. It was their duty to rebuild it in the ancient style as a place of halls and heavenly kiosks, welcoming and peace filled with light and with ideas of immortality. It might seem that the hurly-burly of politics did not belong there, but Islam did not require its adherents, especially civil society groups, to leave politics alone. For a time, this had suited Mr. Erdogan's purposes. He was elected in 2002 by the people, but with few supporters in the bowels of government. Mr. Gülen had plenty, so they became allies. Mr. Erdogan, like him, wanted to see more Islam in public life. Mr. Gülen posed no threat to him, for he was already in America, and his followers, embedded in the bureaucracy, could dispatch all the president's critics to maximum security jails. They proved the ideal instrument to clinch Mr. Erdogan's grip on power. The president then fell out with him in spectacular fashion. In 2013, Gülenists, among the judges and in the police, began to investigate corruption in the government. They arrested many of the president's allies, some of them ministers. The investigation was stopped, but Hizmet was now a cancer, in Mr. Erdogan's words. Then, in 2016, an army faction, backed by Gulenists, staged a violent coup. It collapsed, but not before 250 people had been killed. Mr. Erdogan responded with mass, indiscriminate purges. Hizmet schools were shut down and its newspapers closed. Most Turks were convinced Mr. Gulen was behind both events. As Hizmet's leader, he had to be. Sitting in America, he might even be a CIA asset. He denied it completely. In the corruption investigation, how could he have issued orders to the judges to act? From Pennsylvania, he had no power to make them do anything. As for the coup, he had suffered through four and was insulted to be linked to another. If the coup leaders claimed to be protecting democracy, they were betraying his ideals. How could he, a scholar concerned with wisdom and the divine breaths of poetry, soft-hearted as a child, a man who stressed good manners and had never in his life missed a prayer, involve himself in this fight? That serene mask, however, often slipped aside. He pitied his oppressors, but declared them stains on the pages of history. With savage chops of his right hand and arms, appealing to the heavens, he cursed Mr. Erdogan online and wanted to spit in his face. He bewailed the state of Turkey under him and feared for its future. Clearly, he could not return. Turkey had appealed frequently for his extradition, and there was plenty of circumstantial evidence, including his audience with two coup leaders, but the Americans needed more. He still insisted that he did not want power, but did not object when his followers, in the Pocono, venerated his shoes or fought over the scraps he had left on his plate. He was their leader and messiah, and could have been Turkey's too. As it was, all he had of it in his glass-fronted cabinet was a small collection of different sorts of dry Turkish sand.